Good morning and welcome to The Wheelhouse, where we're all about the richness of life. No, that's a different show. John Dankosky is not here. He is in Minneapolis. You may have seen him last night presenting Derek Jeter with a WNPR travel mug and a messenger bag. Very moving ceremony. And even as Mr. Jeter backed away from Mr. Dankosky, you can see, you know, he was touched by this gesture. So I'm sitting in here. We have a fabulous panel for you today. Joining me here in studio, first of all, are the cameras of CTN, where, by the way, they are operated by real human beings, not robots. Most of the rest of the industry is robots. No robot overlords at CTN. Kevin Rennie's here with us. He's a Hartford Courant columnist, lawyer, and former Republican state senator and representative. He and I share space, sort of, on the Hartford Courant Sunday op-ed page. Daniela Altamare, the fabulous Daniela Altamare, State House reporter for the Hartford Courant. And a special treat for us, making his debut appearance on The Wheelhouse, a man who is synonymous with NBC Connecticut. Bob Maxson is here to know him, actually.
A weather day.
Jerry Brooks is the anchor at NBC Connecticut, co-host of their exciting new Sunday political show, Decision 2014. So Decision 2014 has launched?
Yeah, it's launched, and by virtue of its very title, it appears to be a limited-run show.
Yeah, you probably won't get extended, will you?
Really, unless they change the title on New Year's Day.
Yeah, so you should buy the T-shirts now because they'll be collector's items.
Sunday mornings at 10.
Sunday mornings at 10.
There you go.
Well, it's very exciting to have you here with us today. So last week on The Wheelhouse, we discussed Tom Foley's television ad, and since then there have been lots and lots of new ads flooding the market here. And actually, Jerry, you've written about your thanks for these candidates' ads before because they they do pay for some of those expensive suits.
Well, you know, a little disappointed to see that Mr. Foley's not funding his own campaign. He's gone the state route, but
bring back Linda.
We still appreciate everything that he and Linda did.
You're
a couple
all
of
gonna
years
be
ago.
Sorry. Yeah. You're all gonna be sorry this year.
Be careful what you wish for. Yep. Oh, sorry in what sense?
Well, you don't have Mrs. McMahon to kick around and take all her money.
Somehow or other, I believe that they will all get lots of ads on the air.
I believe so, too.
They will, but it won't be as many as there's no $75 million race going on in Connecticut this year.
No, there's not going to be that money spigot that we enjoyed in the last few races.
We do have new ads, and we're going to talk about them a little bit. We're also going to talk about, you know, I mean, was it Kevin John Nance Garner who referred to the vice presidency as not worth a bucket of warm spit?
He said something more or less like that.
For public radio purposes,
that's correct.
He said.
Correct.
And you can say the same thing about the lieutenant governor.
And then he served for 8 years.
Right. You can say the same thing about the lieutenant governorship here in Connecticut. Why would anybody want it? Well, people not only want it, they want it enough to get real nasty with each other. So we'll also be talking about that in this segment. As we go along here, 860-275-7266. That's a number you could call if you wanted to join the conversation. 860-275-7266. So let's start with the big dog, Governor Dan Malloy. He released his first ad. We're not going to play the whole thing for you because it depends heavily on visuals. But we'll give you just a little tiny taste of the new Dan Malloy ad.
Connecticut's seen some tough times in recent years. One of the worst budget crises in our history. Historic storms that battered our communities. Unimaginable evil let loose in a school. Through it all, Dan Malloy has been strong, steady, by our side.
So, Daniela, the message of this ad is what?
Dan Malloy is a good guy in a crisis. Consistently, his poll ratings, whether it's a bad weather storm, whether it's, you know, the Newtown school shootings, whatever, that's where he seems to do best. So the ad clearly is trying to reinforce that this is a guy you want by your side in tough times.
So, Jerry, this ad, I think it was made by, according to the Connecticut Mirror, made by the same people who did Morning in America, lo, these many years ago for Ronald Reagan. You think it's a good ad? Do you think it's a good tone for Dan Malloy to set?
Being a child of the 60s, a top 40 guy, the one song that came to mind, Chairman of the Board, Gimme Just a Little More Time, and Our Love Will Surely Grow. That's what came to mind. I was also curious to see how he would play the Sandy Hook issue.
Yeah.
He never says Sandy Hook, doesn't say which school. He certainly did shine during that dark period, but, you know, being with a news organization that won, you know, a Peabody Award for coverage, how do you promote it? You don't. Mm-hmm. That would be tacky. So I think the allusion to it works okay.
Yeah. It you know, it's interesting. I've watched it several times and in several different moods. And at one point I watched it with the audio off. If you watch it with the audio off, it's so bleak looking at the mm-hmm. beginning. In fact, there's this initial washed out black mm-hmm. and white shot of something. I'm quite sure what it is I'm looking at. And then it sort of goes on to other stuff. It almost looks like it's an attack ad about mm-hmm. somebody. His message, I guess, really is, have you forgotten that it was like basically the road warrior when I came here?
Well, one reason to watch, if you watch it with the audio off, is that we won't pick up that he never speaks.
Right.
And that I believe the reason for that is that they want to urge people to vote for Dan Malloy. But they don't. They want to keep Dan Malloy as far away from the public in these commercials as they can, because frankly, a lot of people have a viscerally negative reaction to him. And it is. I thought that what was most telling about the ad was all he says is the mandatory disclaimer at the end.
Right.
And they must have focus grouped the sound of his voice. And found that it's a problem. They have, you know, their campaign is in trouble right now, and I think they're trying to find a way to soften him up a little bit with the public, and then attract some voters who they're surprised they don't have on their side.
So Jerry, not to rewrite the chairman of the board, but it's really give him
just a little more time. Yes.
Give me just a little more
time. Interesting observation on your part, though, because the first time I saw the video, I'm thinking, when did we become Detroit?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, that was my first gut reaction to it.
Well, and he also is a little bit at odds with the message that he's been trying to spread around Connecticut, which is don't be so negative. I've never seen so many negative people as the people of Connecticut in the last 4 years.
And in some ways, he's really – I mean, of course, towards the end of the ad, you see a slightly more positive thing. But Daniela, obviously, he sort of has to complete the sentence, really. I mean, in this ad, the primary thrust of this ad is, when I got here, things were really horrible. And now the second part of that sentence is, and things are great now. That ad may be harder to make.
Yeah, and it's really early for him to be on the air. I mean, the Republicans are still kind of fighting on them among themselves. So, you know, for him to go on in July, of course, the Democrats have lots of money, so they can do that. But it's a one-minute ad, which is kind of unusual, mm-hmm. too, longer than those of his opponents. So it's kind of interesting in that way.
Of course, it wasn't a very big buy, so that what they get the benefit of people like us talking about it.
Yeah.
And it really multiplies their investment. Significantly.
It's out on social media.
Yeah. I will be billing them. I don't know. So they usually don't pay, but it's worth a try. All right. So speaking of those Republicans who are still fighting things out and still on the air, John McKinney released his first ad this week. Let's hear just a bit of the John McKinney ad.
Dan Malloy raised taxes, increased spending, and now Connecticut is broke. Tom Foley says he won't cut spending.
I'm not just going to cut spending. I'm not going to cut spending.
That's not going to fix the problem. I'm John McKinney. I led the fight against Malloy's policies, and I voted to cut spending and taxes. I'm the only candidate for governor who is willing to target the size of state government.
All right. He also attacks General Zod, Darth Vader, and Voldemort in this ad. And this it is a little unusual to have an ad where you start out by attacking two different people. Usually, if you're going to do an attack ad. But he sort of tries to do everything in this one ad.
Well, it struck me as, all right, ladies and gentlemen, I don't have a lot of time to win your vote. So let's cut to the chase.
Right.
Here's what I do. Here's what I don't do. Here's what they don't do. And really, I need you to understand this right away. That's the impression I get.
And although Daniela, in some ways, I feel as though the challenge for a candidate like McKinney, who when you look at the polls – you know, I said last week that he has Richard Gephardt syndrome, which is that he's served forever, but nobody knows who he is. Mm-hmm. You know, his real challenge is to introduce himself. And I don't know if he really does that very successfully in this ad.
No, and I think Jerry's right. There's a kind of a hurried sense to it. But on the other hand, it seems to me kind of an effective ad because he's saying, you know, these other guys, this is what they're about, and, you know, this is what I'll do. It's not, you know, me walking on the beach with my kids or, you know, fixing my car with my son like Foley's ad is. But, you know, it does kind of put him out there. And he has to do something bold. As you said, his poll numbers, at least in the Q poll, nobody knows who he is. He's been the leader of the Senate for, what, you know, he's been there for years.
The minority leader of the Senate.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, the Republican leader. So, but
not that Don Williams is a household word either. But.
No, nobody knows who any of these guys are, you know. So I think this ad, you know, kind of skips that and just goes right to, you know, the meat of it.
K-Dog, did you think this ad works?
It's a lot of buckshot. the problem is, you're right, he's stuffing a lot into a short ad. And his challenge is, first of all, he's not very well known. And the Republican primary turnout is probably not going to be very high because it's not going to be driven, as we've mentioned, by a big spending Senate contest. And so you're going to have fewer people. So let's say they're focusing these ads on maybe 80,000 registered Republicans scattered around the state. And I don't think they have much of a – I don't think they have an idea of how they're going to reach them. And so they're trying an ad like this. And, you know, he had very little support at the Republican state convention. He doesn't have much of an organization. It's all going to be in that $1.4 million that he's getting in public funding, I think, today.
I want to come back to one thing that you said in just a second, but I do want to say it's also – there's something a little cheesy looking about the ad. And part of it is the little clip of Foley, you know, and – where that thing, I'm not going to cut spending, is kind of like – it's not really matched up all that perfectly with his mouth. It looks like a Godzilla movie or something.
Just a little, you know, jab. And you hear it twice. Hey, in case you didn't hear it the first time, let him say it again.
Yeah, cool. Then he looks like a robot who's misfiring somehow or something. But, you know, that issue of low turnout, Daniela, raises also the question – I mean, sometimes in a low turnout situation, you don't have to get that many people out to the polls to win. I mean, that's where McKinney can maybe have a shot, even though he looks terrible in the Q poll. If it's low turnout in the primary, you know, maybe you win just because you got lucky that day.
True, but it's also going to depend on how motivated the, you know, the gun folks are. I mean, if they come out, they, you know, in a small number primary, they can skew everything. So.
And they don't like him. They really
no,
do regard
they hate
him. Yeah. I mean, they are.
They do. They really – someone was telling me that if you – at an event with gun people that you mentioned Dan Malloy, and you know, you do get a negative reaction, but you mentioned John McKinney, and they're out of their seats.
Well, I did do something last night that I never do. I looked at comments. Okay, I just don't. Yeah, my life is better that way.
Right.
And you know, the gun people were out.
Right. They are the most spectacularly motivated group of people. They're very energized. They know who they like. They know who they don't like. They pretty much don't like anybody, but they know who they don't like the most. But, I mean, Kevin, as you pointed out weeks and weeks ago, everything that we've seen so far suggests that, you know, they make a lot of noise and they're on a lot of comment threads, but there just really aren't as many of them as maybe we had thought.
The proof was with your sweetheart, Martha Dean, when she
– I don't like to talk about my personal life on this show, Kevin.
Well, you shouldn't write about it then.
She's Rick Green's sweetheart. Sorry.
I proposed to Tom Foley in my column this week. Try to keep my personal life straight.
She had perhaps a handful of delegates going into the Republican convention, and earlier in the year there was a sense of, ooh, what's going to happen if Martha Dean runs for governor, and what happened was really nothing, and the same thing with
Joe Visconti.
And so what a year ago people in the Republican Party were had a sense of foreboding about is kind of melted away.
Well, no, there's another race that's going on. There's another primary that's happening. Well, actually, there's a lot of primaries that are happening at the state legislature level. But there's a primary that's happening for the lieutenant governorship. And actually, three people emerged from the Republican state convention with sufficient delegates to qualify for this primary. This is a very, very unusual situation in virtually every possible regard. One of them, David Walker, he's paired up with John McKinney. They are sort of each other's running mates. But the other two, Heather Bond Summers and Penny Bakayaki, are sort of freestanding lieutenant governor candidates. Heather Bond Summers started out as the mate of Mark Boughton and then decided that there were greener pastures out there. So they're running ads now too. And Heather Summers, and Kevin got right on this in his Daily Erections blog, Heather Bond Summers got right out of the gate with a pretty tough radio ad about her opponent, because you know how nasty these lieutenant governor races can get.
Well, you know, 4 years ago, Mary Glassman got pretty nasty with Nancy Wyman.
I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah. Remember she sort of did the old washed-up hippie thing? And basically,
I must have been on vacation that
week.
Yeah,
you must have been because it was
– washed-up hippie?
Yeah, it was like a relic. It was not nice. It was not nice for – well, I was not surprised.
I've seen Nancy Wyman walk an entire parade in heels. You don't mess with somebody who can do that.
Well, and she rolled right over Mary Glassman, but it had some unpleasantness.
Well, Nancy Wyman has turned out to be essential for me because in times of crisis, when Dan Malloy addresses the state, I always check her game face because you can always tell really how much trouble we're in, you know,
especially after the storm.
Yeah,
you can tell how deep the nods are.
Right, you can tell whether the power is coming back or forget Jeff Butler.
I think she killed Jeff Butler. She took him out.
Well, we have to listen to a little bit of this Heather Bond Sumner's ad, and it is an attack ad.
Republicans have a great chance to defeat Democrat Governor Dan Malloy, so why risk it with a lieutenant governor candidate like Hartford insider Penny Bakayaki? Oh, you know Penny Bakayaki. She sponsored Connecticut's pro-marijuana legislation. But did you also know she was paid $110,000 by pro-marijuana D.C. lobbyists and then claimed the money was for travel?
All right. Of course, there's a lie in that ad, which is that we know Penny Bakayaki. Nobody knows who that is. But anyway, Kevin, you were the first one to pounce on this, so you get to talk about it first.
Well, for a first ad, it's unusual to have a candidate introduce themselves with an attack ad like that.
Right.
Basically not mention much about the candidate. And
I know you've never heard of me, but here's this other person you've never heard of either who you should really hate.
You really don't want right. And you notice how she punches out the first penny with that dismissive P. It's hard stuff, and I believe there's going to be a television ad coming next week that has the same message. Frankly, it's a race that's not going to get as much attention as a race for governor. So she's got to stake her claim. They're all unknown, and Penny Bakayaki has the advantage of being the endorsed candidate. Heather Bond Sumner has the disadvantage of being on the ballot next to John McKinney, who is not her running mate, and then below them is David Walker. So there can be plenty of confusion if anyone's paying attention. They might be confused. So she needs to stake her claim in a very decisive way, which they've made their choice.
Well, Daniela, this ad sort of tries to raise a few different issues, including how much money she got, Penny Bakayaki got in her activities for the legalization of medical marijuana, also the peculiar set of charges that she brought up against the third of her opponents, Dave Walker, at the time of the convention.
Now she's going after Susan Raff.
I can't keep up with this stuff. But so, I mean, and this is all kind of once again, for somebody like Penny Bakayaki, who most people have never heard of, I mean, I don't know how well any of this stuff is going to stick to her.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, when you think about, you know, who'll be voting in this primary, it'll be, you know, it's Republican insiders, you know, people maybe on Republican town committees and, you know.
So maybe they do know.
Some do know. And, you know, the other thing about those two candidates, they're both kind of playing to the same base. They're both, you know, second congressional district, you know, Eastern Connecticut. And then you have Dave Walker from down in Fairfield County who, you know, is trying to position himself a little differently. So, you know, it does have the potential to be really nasty between those two, and he can kind of sit it out and say, you know, I'm the grown-up in the room, and, you know, I'm going to talk about fiscal responsibility while you guys attack one another. So it might help him.
I don't know, Jerry, did you – my reaction to that ad, and once again, I listened to that ad several times, was that as soon as that woman, whoever she is, and it's not Heather Bond Sumner's.
It's
an announcer with a rather strange way of speaking. She says Malloy, and she has this kind of odd way of – but as soon as she's done talking about Penny Bakayaki, she's going to start gossiping about me and you, both of us, you know, because she just seems like that's pretty much what she does all day long is just talk crap about people.
That was my first exposure to that commercial. My image – Joan Collins and Linda Evans, catfight dynasty. Okay, except maybe they can do it on Hammonasset Beach or something.
You know, have you seen Jerry Brooks's lawn? You'd think he would mow it every once in a while.
I mean, no, Brooks.
Brooks. All right, so there I don't know if I've even sort of laid this out adequately, but so basically we have Penny Bakayaki, a former she's a state legislator. We have Heather Bond Sumner's, who's she was the deputy mayor of Groton.
Mayor of Groton.
Mayor of Groton. See, there'll be an attack out about me just because I got that wrong. And then Dave Walker, the former Inspector General, Comptroller General of the United States of America, as Matt DiRienzo said, possibly the most overqualified person ever to run for Lieutenant Governor of Connecticut. Although T. Clark Hall would probably disagree with him. Dave Walker's going to, because everybody's going to have an ad out now. Everybody, whether you know who they are or what they're doing or not, they have to have a commercial. So here's Dave Walker's ad.
I'm Dave Walker. I'm a CPA and a Reagan presidential appointee. As our nation's top auditor, I led the fight to reduce spending and reform government. My efforts to promote fiscal discipline were featured on 60 Minutes, and I led turnaround efforts in both the public and private sectors. Making government more efficient and growing our economy is what I do best.
And now, Jerry, I want this job that has almost no responsibilities.
I'm thinking to myself, you want to be lieutenant governor after doing that?
I know.
Really? You were on 60 Minutes, and now you want to be lieutenant governor of Connecticut. Okay. You know, whatever. Sure.
I mean, he does sound really impressive anyway, right?
Well, he says the magic word in that ad, Reagan, yes. Appointee. That, for Republicans, is, you know, I mean, that's as good as anything, right, if you're a registered Republican. So.
Although, if you see the video, the downside is Dave Walker's 80s look, which is not a good one. He's got those big aviator glasses and the mustache and the whole thing. Is just, you know, he's somebody who's aged incredibly well, considering how dorky he looked in the 80s. Kevin?
You know, this is – keep saying – They're looking to move a very small number of voters. And so they've all done polling. And I think, you know, you don't have to do a poll to know that for Republican primary voters, it helps to associate with Ronald Reagan. Primary voters are older. And I think that they've found that jobs in the economy in all their polls are the issues that move voters across the state.
I also think, I mean, it is a good ad. And I mean, I want this guy to be lieutenant governor. I like Nancy Wyman. But I mean, I think, you know, we have the worst roads in America. We might have the best lieutenant governor with David Walker. I mean, it seems like, you know, if we can't get Jack Bauer.
You know, I do think that if he became lieutenant, if John McKinney became governor or Tom Foley became governor, I think as a lieutenant governor, he does bring more sophisticated knowledge than we're accustomed to in that office.
Clearly, he has a resume.
You know, of all sorts of issues. I think they'd probably use him in ways that the lieutenant governor has not been called upon to act before.
I spent some time with him yesterday, and you know, he does have some interesting ideas about, you know, creating an inspector general like post in Connecticut. Having more oversight. You know, he has some interesting ideas about ways he would change things. You know, he says he's solely focused on, you know, financial things and money things, and not really focused on social issues. He is a very strong Second Amendment person, which kind of puts him at odds with McKinney in a kind of weird way. You know, they're running mates, but they're really, you know, they're running on separate ballot lines, as, you know, they'll appear on separate ballot lines. So it could be interesting. His views on gun rights, I think, are right in line with, at least with Bakayaki. I'm not too familiar with Summers's, but.
Well, Can Connecticut still have an all-male anchor team?
I think when it comes to gun rights, I think you can probably assume that Heather Bond Summers is aligned with the Second Amendment, just because if she weren't, she wouldn't have gotten as many votes at the state convention as she did.
That is a good question. I mean, it may have been a facetious question. But
no, but there hasn't been one in a long time, really. Yeah. I mean, two men at the top of the ticket. I can't remember the last one
would have been Governor O'Neill
O'Neill Feliso.
Feliso, yeah.
All right. Well, we'll check our data banks when we take this break and see if we made a mistake on that one. But I think that might actually be right. If we're wrong, you can correct us. 860-275-7296. No, that's actually my phone. 860-275-7266. You can also email us. You can email us. You can tweet us. But I don't even know where you tweet. Tweet us at Where We Live. I think that would be a good bet. Tweet us at Where We Live. We'll be back after this. And we're back. It's Where We Live. And with us in studio, Connecticut's most beloved anchorman, Jerry Brooks, anchor NBC Connecticut, co-host of the new Sunday political show, Decision 2014. Are you on this week?
I believe so. I'll be on the fourth or fifth hole at Tallwood Country Club at that time. But, yeah, Sunday morning at 10.
Sunday morning at 10.
We will have Governor Malloy, Tom Foley, and David Gregory.
David Gregory.
We'll find out what he knows about Connecticut.
His third-party candidacy will be announced today.
Yeah.
Danielle Altomare from the Hartford Current, where she's a State House reporter. Kevin Rennie, a Hartford Current columnist and former Republican state legislator himself. So last weekend, New London held its annual Sail Fest event, and in the days leading up to that, there was some uncertainty as to whether the state's flagship, the Amistad, would attend. It eventually did, but only after Governor Malloy got involved and said it would be wholly unacceptable for the ship not to attend Sail Fest. Now, it should be noted that the state has given Amistad America, which is the ship's operator, hundreds of thousands of dollars, a lot of which is not accounted for. Now you can't count on them to show up. What do they think they are, a charter school? Just kidding. So David Collins is joining us right now. David, you've been writing a lot about this. Maybe you can just quickly give us in digestible capsule form the story of the problems of the Amistad.
Sure. Good morning, Tom. This has been going on for about a year now, and it's been pretty widely reported that the organization that the state originally gave the ship to, Amistad America, really no longer exists. They haven't filed income tax returns for 2 years. The IRS has rescinded their nonprofit status. They haven't filed reports for the Connecticut Secretary of State. There's no board of directors. There's no functioning organization, really. But the state continues, even though this has all been reported, the state continues to funnel money to them in quarterly payments, almost $400,000 a year. So it's sort of remarkable that the governor finally, after a year of all of this being public, started to get angry at them and sort of stomp his feet and say, what's going to happen next? It's kind of curious. I wonder what is going to happen next, because it seems to me that at some point the attorney general should be involved here, too. And at some point they need to kind of take the ship back. Or at least not keep pressuring this organization that doesn't exist. It's an individual who took the ship and is running it and is taking the state money. So it'll be curious. We're kind of at an interesting juncture where the governor seems to finally have acknowledged the precarious nature of it all, and we wonder what will be next and who will tell the story.
I would say, David, that they really disgraced the traditions of the Amistad, but then actually it was a slave ship, so really how can you do that? When you say take the ship back, I mean, who owns this ship? Do we own the ship?
Well, that's a good question, and that's why we have the attorney general, right? The attorney general is supposed to be the lawyer for the state, and it's complicated, and I'm sure they'd rather not deal with it. But I think originally there was a mortgage, and it maybe lasted 10 years. Mr. Seaport built the ship. The state paid for it. It went to this nonprofit organization, which then was a functioning organization that had a board of directors and filed, you know, income tax returns. But that organization really has ceased to exist. The last executive director kind of took the ship off and leased it to another organization, and he took a job with that organization, and now he's appointed the woman who used to be the cook on the ship, the executive director, and the state keeps funneling money to them, and it's kind of ludicrous, really. Yeah. At some point, the state needs to step in, and it's legally murky, but they need to figure it out. There shouldn't be, and that's not just the ship, and who knows what the ship is worth, but, you know, this is the story that the state chose to spend all this money on to showcase and to tell people, and you know, it's an insult to the people who treasure that story and want it to be told. So let this happen this way.
All right. They do sound more like a charter school, but that's fine. All right. Thanks very much, David Collins. I know you're over on one of the islands and connection's not all that great. So, Kevin, is this just sort of, you know, I mean, there's an old saying that I just made up. If you want something done, just wait till an election year. So is that what this is all about?
We've had several years of the state being very generous with what they would call investments, and we're at a point where people are naturally looking to see what's the result of those loans and investments, and the ones that have not worked out very well are going to get a lot of attention. I mean, if the Attorney General went after Earl O'Garrow's Maserati, certainly it ought to be easier to go after the replica of the Amistad.
Yeah, I think
a lot easier to find than that Maserati was.
I think the optics of George Jepson foreclosing on a slave ship are, I don't really know who they work for, but they work for somebody, and they, it would be sort of worth seeing. I don't know. Anybody else?
I think there's a fair amount of political correctness involved in all this because it is the Amistad. There seems to be some petulance involved here, and I think the day of New London couldn't be happier because if I'm correct, the Amistad is a little upset with the day's coverage of the issue.
Right.
Therefore, we will punish New London and not show up at Sailfest because of the day's coverage. Right. What could make a newspaper happier?
Yeah, they managed to make the day very important. Somehow or other, Danielle, I don't feel like the Amistad is going to be one of the real major issues of this campaign. But it was sort of it gave Governor Malloy a chance to do that thing that he sort of was trying to exhibit in the ad that we talked about, right? There's something wrong, so boom, he knows what to do.
Yeah, I'm going to fix it. I'm going to make it happen.
We've got a tweet from James. Wow, how can my home state be so awesome, yet its government be so stupid? That's actually the slogan of the next Dave Walker ad. But thanks for tweeting that anyway. All right, so we're going to move from boats to roads. And so this week, the White House issued an alarming report that said 41% of Connecticut roads are in poor condition. All of our guests who drove here today were taking their lives in their hands, basically. Although, really, the odds were in your favor, right?
Well, lucky me, they finally finished the road construction that led me from my house to here. But
59% of the roads are not life-threatening.
I have had some drives home at night because they do work at night. I get out of work at 11:30. And, you know, they are busy at work. These guys are just absolutely all over the place. The way they set up the cones, I'm thinking maybe, and I know this is the wrong thing to say, but, God, maybe I'd understand this if I drank first. Because stone sober, I'm looking at the cones thinking, wait a minute, is that a lane? Is that the exit? And finally, I just got off and went a side road because I found it so confusing. But I can't believe that this study was a stunning revelation to anybody.
Well, I mean, the study is sort of it's an attempt to frame a problem, right? Do you want to try to explain?
Well, it's an attempt to spur action, also because the funding bills have been in Congress, and they want action. And so, one way to do that is to tell people in states how bad their roads are, and maybe that will cause them to contact their representatives in Congress and get something done.
Yeah, and road and construction creates jobs.
Yeah, and it does. Road builders have always been a powerful lobby. And so Congress did act. I think it kind of acted yesterday, at least to get through the next 10 months, I think.
Well, Danielle, I do think this is the kind of thing that people don't necessarily understand in its nuance and in its detail, right? So we've got a problem here, which is basically that the federal gas tax has been set at the same level, I think, since 1993, and not even adjusted for inflation. And meanwhile, while that's happening, cars are getting more efficient. People are driving a little bit less. There's like a whole bunch of reasons right. why it doesn't generate. It hasn't kept pace with inflation, and it hasn't kept pace with basically how much people are driving or how efficient their cars are. So as a fixed fund to use to keep the infrastructure, the road infrastructure in shape, it doesn't really work right anymore. And so what they're trying to do with these reports and with proposals, I mean, Chris Murphy and one of his Republican colleagues are even suggesting a 12 cent hike in the federal gas tax.
Yeah, that didn't go over too well.
No, not at all. But I think people look at this and they go, really, our roads are the worst? Well, that must be Dan Malloy's fault, right? I mean, I'm not sure anybody even understands what the point that's being made, that there's a structural federal problem. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, you know, people assume it's the DOT or whatever. I mean, remember the DOT, what was it, a month ago, got that Southington situation resolved really quickly and without any major problems. That seemed to go okay. But you're right. I mean, I don't think people delineate between the federal and the state and how things are funded, and it's so complicated and, you know, all that. So.
Let's hear Dan Malloy trying to set us straight at least about something.
I've increased the budget very substantially with respect to infrastructure investment around transportation, including roads, highways, and transit. Very proud of that work. We have put more and more money every year. If you actually compare our budget to the last budget in the Rail administration, we're actually up 147%.
You know, it's once again, this is Daniela, first of all, there is sort of a problem in the state to whatever extent they haven't kept intact the transportation money, right? There's supposed to be a transportation fund. They're not supposed to rate it.
They're constantly rating it because they have emergencies to deal with and other things that they want to spend the money on. And that's just, you know, kind of a rite of spring or whatever at the legislature.
And I think politically this shakes out as a weird issue, Jerry, just in the sense that, okay, so you've got the Obama administration making this pitch, like saying, look, this is how bad the infrastructure is. This is how bad the infrastructure is in your state. You know, we want to do something about it. We want to put in a permanent fix where there's enough money so that this stuff isn't happening. You know, and actually sort of good roads are things that typically conservatives, you know, they kind of want to have good roads. They like cars. They like driving. But it's inevitably a pitch for money, and that money can't just come out of nowhere.
Well, that would be a lovely, perfect world, but we live in Connecticut. We had a lousy February. It ate up the roads. And what are you going to do, move to Alabama?
Yeah.
Also, this is one of those examples of we have public policies aimed at changing people's behavior, which is drive less, have a car that uses less gas. And so so that's been a success. And government gets quite upset at its successes when they may mean less money. If you look at, you know, for instance, cigarettes, taxes on cigarettes are very, very high because we want people to smoke fewer of them. And yet when that money starts going away because people are maybe smoking fewer of them, then they're not happy about that. They've got to go find it somewhere else.
I mean, I kind of liked what Murphy and I forget which Republican
Corker,
it was
think.
Corkery that was, that he teamed up with. I kind of liked what they said anyway. It was this is the real number. Now, the interesting part of that real number is if you add a 12-cent hike to the gas tax, people are probably going to drive even less because gas costs too much. Now, if you're concerned about climate change, global warming, greenhouse gas emissions and stuff like that, what you really want is for gas to become so expensive that people drive less. That's not what they're talking about doing, although it might have that net effect.
Yeah, that's the sort of the internal contradiction of it all is that we say we want people driving less. So but when they do, we want them to pay more for the roads.
All right. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break here. If there's anything we've said so far that you feel that you need to chime in on, call right now before we move on to other topics in the next segment. Our number, 860-275-7266. There, I got it right that time. 860-275-7266. And you may do the Twitter thing at Where We Live. And now it's time to do a ruthless promotion for various things. So tomorrow on this very show, in this very time slot, Where We Live hits the archives for a show on turtles. Actually, that was a great show. If you didn't hear the turtle show the first time around, you definitely want to hear it. Today on our show at 1 o'clock, we're talking about competitive eating, which used to be just, you know, a bunch of people with their hands behind their backs, plunging their faces into blueberry pies. And now it's like really, well, it's competitive. Competitive eating has gotten competitive. No, they don't eat turtles, but they do. I mean, now it is. It's big business. It's big media. It's, you know, everything that is wrong with big time sports.
Is there a cable network in Hartford that's going to – it's going to promote that?
Ooh. It would be some version of the Back Nine. It would be the GI version of the Back Nine network.
People with pile over their faces.
No, it would be the tertiary colon network or something. Well, anyway, so that's what we're doing. Then coming up on Sunday at 10, you'll have to watch – what's it called again?
Decision 2014.
It's not connected to LeBron James in any way though, right?
You know what?
That would be a bad idea.
That would be fine. If we can get LeBron, he's on.
It's not the Decision 2014. Decision 2014, that's the brand new NBC Connecticut Sunday morning politics show that will live for the life of this electoral cycle anyway. Mm-hmm. Then after you're through reading that, assuming you just got up in time to watch that, then you read Kevin Rennie's column in the Hartford Current. Daniela, what do you want to promote? You can promote anything you want right now.
I'll promote our blog always, but that's about it. Capital Watch.
Capital
Must
Watch.
Read.
Right. Also, the Daniela Altomare line of sheets and towels and pillowcases at JCPenney. All right, that's enough promotion. But she may need those pillowcases. She may need to do well with those because, oh, Daniela. August 4th, I think, is the day that we're being told is a day of decision. Actually, I don't know why I'm saying Daniela. Kevin and I work for the Hartford Current, too. Jerry's the only person who's coming out of this.
I'm just sitting here going, hey, I'm good.
Jerry's the only survivor of this whole thing. But on August 4th, and this, by the way, might be an interesting thing for people to call in. I know I haven't really sort of pushed for calls very much today, but I guess the question would be, what would you want to see happen to your beloved daily newspaper, the Hartford Current, 860-275-7266, 860-275-7266. 275-7266. Why would I ask such a question, you ask? Well, because the Tribune Publishing is going to spin off from Tribune Company on August 4th. The new company will be called something like Tribune Publishing. I think it is called Tribune Publishing. It doesn't really make any difference what they're called. But anyway, it's all these newspapers. It's the Chicago Trib, the LA Times, and six other daily newspapers, one of which happens to be the Hartford Courant. So I think it's mean to go to Daniela first. and anyway, as I say, we're all affected except for Jerry. I don't know.
Well, Jerry's affected too.
Jerry's
because
I am a subscriber.
Well, but let's face it. The news, the television news often jumps off of the Hartford Current.
I've had more than one conversation with Dave Owens of the Hartford Current about this. And apparently, I guess I'm one of the few broadcast types who will openly admit the Current has always set the agenda for news coverage. Mm. It always has. I hope it always will. I want the Current to be around. I want my friends to have jobs. I've always, known a bunch of people at the paper. But it's the Hartford Current, for heaven's sake. We need this news organization in the city. And, I always – here's my line of objection in the newsroom. Are we going to take stories out of the paper? Yes. Do we, independently confirm the facts? Yeah. But are we going to advance it? If we're just ripping it right out of the paper, I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But, will we advance the story to the next level? That's when, I'm fine with everything. But, I do hope and pray for your survival and success.
It sounds like something that pastors will be asking for at churches. Before you go home to watch Decision 2014, say a prayer for the
Hartford. Say a prayer for the Hartford.
We should sort of say what we know. Okay, so what we know is the Tribune's spinning off. They're keeping TV stations. They're spinning off the newspapers. They stop me when I say something that's not true because I don't have the best grasp of the media business. Witness my career. But they kept the newspapers as a bundle. Now, one of the questions about the Hartford Current and some of the other newspapers in the bundle is, are they the banana or are they the peel? You worry that there's somebody out there, his name might be Rupert Murdoch, who wants to own the LA Times, who wants to own the Chicago Trib too, wants to eat the banana and throw away the peel. to me, that's one of the questions. You at least went, that means that you might feel like you could.
Yeah, we just get these Murdoch rumors whenever this discussion comes up, and now they're hot and heavy again. Murdoch's interested. He wants to get into LA. He wants to get into Chicago. That would give him holdings in all the major cities in the U.S. But he's not interested in us. He's not interested in Baltimore. He's not interested in Orlando or whatever else. Who knows? I mean, you can drive yourself crazy just speculating and, angsting over it.
I just driving here on one of Connecticut's fine roads. The road I was on seemed safe enough this morning. Murdoch has made some kind of bid for Time Warner. And I think I heard, $70 billion or some enormous sum. And so probably may not – needs – it's concentrating on that rather than more newspapers. But I think we should mention that at least in my understanding of the newspaper business and the Tribune papers – the Hartford Current has a very high market penetration and is not a burden.
No.
So, right. So people, investors, people who like the news business, when they get down to the numbers, I think that the Hartford Current is still an attractive newspaper property.
Actually, what I'm getting over the transom here, according to the New York Times, that 21st Century Fox, that's Murdoch's empire, made an $80 billion takeover bid for Time Warner, but was rebuffed. So, but obviously, that may have other chapters to it as well.
Because Time Warner stock went up $12 on that news. So,
I want to save time for a quick conversation about WTIC, too, our other media story. But, I don't know how this would work in terms of the prying apart of the bundle. But, you still wonder whether the Current will ever revert to local ownership. When I actually first went to work there, It was. It was mm-hmm. locally owned here. It was before it had been by. It was, you know, like the newspapers used to be. And that may be their final resting place.
That's what they had. Philadelphia Inquirer. That's what happened with it.
Yeah. Every time I talk to Weicker and Lamont, I say, buy the Courant. Come on. Wouldn't you guys like to own a newspaper? Or the Chases or anything?
I asked Linda McMahon the same thing.
All right. Well, talk to us before you actually talk to Linda McMahon about these things. All right. So the other story this week, I mean, this is a, sort of the story that never ends. It's the story of John Rowland. He's in federal court. I'm not going to lay out the whole complicated case because then the show would be over. But one of the aspects, one of the new revelations was I think it came out late Wednesday or early Thursday. The prosecutors were saying that they were going to tell the jury that when Governor John G. Rowland was selling his consulting services to the Lisa Wilson Foley campaign, he was also, in the words of the Hartford Courant, secretly selling the muscle behind his long-running political talk show on WTIC radio. Kevin, this is something both you and I have both written about this in the past.
We started a long time ago.
Long time ago. And that, you know, really, this is – well, I mean, Jerry, I'm going to flip over to you for a second. You know, a lot of things happen in the media business, and some things happen that we're, you know, that we can debate about, that we can argue about. But, and there, you could even say there aren't as many bright lines as there used to be. But one of them still is, I think, you can't take money from somebody and have that alter your performance on the air as a journalist and
this,
then not tell anybody.
To me, is the ultimate black and white issue. And I'll just repeat what I posted on Facebook. If this is true, to me, it's the ultimate sin to take the public airwaves and sell them to your own benefit. If this is true, then it's awful. And look, you know, WTIC's management, you know, has said they were totally unaware of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay. You know, you got to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. I will anyway.
Do you?
Sure, I do. But if John wrote again, it's the ultimate sin if it's true, because it's a true violation of public trust.
Yeah, I'm first
there
of all,
there were a lot of signs as to what was going on in that 2012 campaign. Really, a lot
it
of signs.
It was very obvious to anyone listening. I mean,
I think they willfully ignored what was right in front of them, and then when the news broke about his being the subject of a grand jury investigation, they basically shrugged.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They kept him on.
Yeah, and I think now, I mean, at this point, even if they wanted to make a statement, they can't, right? They've got to let this play out.
Oh, no,
courts.
It's got to play out, you know, judicially.
And they have every interest now in seeing John Rowland exonerated. I mean, the best thing for him is that he gets a total acquittal. Then they can then I mean, I'm not saying that that's probable. I'm guessing more likely that he will be convicted on the facts and then this thing will work its way through some kind of appeal process. But if he were acquitted, then they would say, and we're issuing a clarifying policy to all of our employees for the future about how this, you know, should never happen again. And it'll probably go away for them. I mean, they haven't
– probably. Although if, as it now appears likely, that Andrew Rohrbach, who's a Superior Court judge now, testifies,
right.
That's going to really bring it to life in a way that everyone's going to be able to understand.
Right, because he has a story to tell basically about
yes.
having been invited on the show,
yeah.
thinking it was a routine interview, and then, in his words, having been ambushed and being treated very harshly. And that this coincided pretty sharply with the beginning of the financial relationship between John Rowland and the Wilson Foley campaign. So that is a great and very interesting story to tell. We have to go. You have your marching orders. Get up on Sunday morning. Read Daniela's articles and the blog, Capital Watch, and then read Kevin Rennie's column. And then turn on the TV at 10 o'clock for Decision 2014, where you'll get to see Jerry Brooks and the rest of the NBC Connecticut team cover this great political season. Thanks for putting up with me today. Thanks to Lydia Brown, Tucker Ives, all of our wonderful interns. And we'll all be back. Well, I'll be back at 1, actually, with competitive eating.